2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. The sky's so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Hour number three of the KSL Greenhouse show this morning on a lovely but warm Saturday. I'm Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos. Ton, it's always fun to come and hang out with you and talk to callers about their questions. And we're going to do more of that here in just a minute. But first, I want to talk to you about your plant of the week. You've got an interesting one here because I love lilacs. This is the Japanese tree lilac.
It is. And they're in Eastern Asia, China, Japan, Korea, those areas, there are three or four subspecies of this tree lilac. And they all look fairly similar. And they are a little bit more slow growing than the bush lilacs that we're used to. But they also bloom about a month later. And so they're just barely starting to bloom now. And they will have an ivory white blossom to them that has a really good fragrance to them. But it's a tree that tolerates our soil well, that honestly should be planted more as compared to trees like flowering plums and Canada red chokecherries and spring snow crab apples.
It seems like the standard requirement in every lawn is always a snowball bush and a lilac.
Oh my goodness. When I used to work at the garden center doing full-time sales, you would get to the point that people would come in and be like, I want some aspen, some potentilla, and some barberries with daylilies. And you'd almost be like, well, I'm going to go around the corner and vomit, and then I'll come back and help you. You know, because there are just so many plants. Or the other thing I would say is, well, my neighbors have a kidney bean with an aspen, so we're going to do that. Well, homogeneity in this case is not good, and diversity, plant diversity, is so important to disease management and pest management in your yards. And there is nothing wrong with doing something different than the neighbors. And so there are so many trees out there that are just gorgeous trees. Mm-hmm. You know, Laval hawthorns are blooming right now. That was another one we might do next week for the plant of the week. We have the tree lilacs coming into bloom. And so what I would say is maybe dare to be different in this situation. And I'm not saying you have to upend cars and bury them in your park strip, but I mean, there are more plants out there than spireas, aspen, spring snow crab apple, flowering pear, and Canada red chokecherry. And you can do a gorgeous yard and increase your home value by 10 or 15% just by doing things different and doing them well. And this is one of those trees I'd highly recommend in that mix.
Is it easy to come by at the nursery?
It's becoming a lot more available. It used to be that you had to really look for them. But most major nurseries, whether it's J&J, Valley, Progressive, Linden Nursery, I think I covered all the counties there, we should have probably containerized stuff in. If not, they'll have the bald and burlap. And again, you'll have to be a little patient getting the tree established and going. But once it's up and growing, I think you'll be very happy with it.
And it's a good time to plant then right now, right?
Oh, wonderful time.
Yeah.
You know, some other things that we've been kind of hitting on what to do with plants in the summer.
Right.
You know, landscapers are going all summer long and oftentimes have about a 96 to 99% success rate on a well-installed yard. And it's just that you don't want to miss a watering during the summer. You don't want to overwater, but you just don't want to let things dry out. And you can plant all summer long.
Right. Extremes aren't good for water or a lot of other things in life. So, and learning those, you know, and watering is a little bit different and getting them established. We talked about that earlier, right?
And, correct.
But trying to figure out that happy medium for each plant is really critical.
It is, and it's not difficult, but it's challenging for people because they want to know how many minutes on what days. You know, almost like it's a diet schedule and I'm eating this at this time. Yeah. It's not like that. What you need to do is get to know your soil. And once you know your soil, management of everything becomes so much easier. And so, you know, one thing I recommend to people is to go dig a hole in their garden or a flower bed about a foot deep and a foot wide and fill it with water and watch how long it takes that water to drain out. If it drains out quickly, then your soil, that's a measure that your soil is probably fine. But if that water's in there for 6 or 8 hours, then you probably have a lot of clay and you can grow things just fine. But there's management that needs to occur that's going to be different.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so if you can get to know your soil, you will be a great gardener.
All right. Well, let's get to back to our calls here, Ton, and let's help out Joe in Springville. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. How are you today?
Good. I've got a couple of issues on my peach trees. I've got over the last year, any of the large trunks coming out on the or large branches coming out, the bark is peeling up on the top of those branches, and I'd lose about half the bark on all the way around, and then at the top of those, I'm assuming that I get some really big sap deposits, which I'm assuming is borers. Tree borers or peach borers, but anyway, I'm just trying to figure it out because I've lost several main branches due to this bark problem.
Well, is it the south or west side of the tree that the bark's sloughing off of?
It is the north side where it originally started, but it's on all of them.
Okay, but it's on the north on everyone or?
No, I mean, it's on all of them. So some branches face south, some branches face east, some face west. And
okay. One thing I would recommend doing is painting your trunks white with water-based latex paint in the fall. Just in case you get sun scald on there, that will help prevent it. And you'll do that every 2 years.
And I will say, if it's related to sun, I have done some pretty major trimming to open it up.
Well, that actually wouldn't help in this situation just because, and I'll tell you why, in opening the trees up can be fine. But in this situation, the sun scalds the bark in the winter because it causes sap flow and then the sap freezes at night and it bursts the conductive tissue and eventually just makes the bark fall off. And that's why I'm recommending painting the trunks white. And
yeah,
so...
I was just meaning, I wondered if the trimming was the cause.
If you over-trimmed at the wrong time of year, it absolutely could be. So when do you do your trimming?
Usually around April.
Okay, so mid-March is the time, so you're about on there. If you pruned in October or November, yes, that would cause that. Some other things to look at, and do you spray the trees for peach tree borer?
I usually spray at least once a year, but I know I need to spray more.
Well, once a year is kind of like taking a quarter of a bath, you know? You just wash your leg and your arm. You need to do it monthly for it to really be effective because you've knocked out about a quarter of the season those borers can get in there. So the other thing that I think you have in there is a canker disease called Pseudomonas or Cytospora. They look about the same. And the symptoms are similar. And so if you have a lot of bark damage, it's almost bark damage and Pseudomonas or Cytospora just go hand in hand. The borers can be anywhere in the trunk, but about 80% of the time, they're at the base of the trunk, right at soil level or just below the soil, and you'll want to scrape the bark away.
Right at the very top of the branches.
So I'm wondering, you do need to carve into those sappy areas to see if you can find any tunnels or anything. And carefully, you don't want to damage the trees more, but I'm really suspect that you might have Pseudomonas or Cytospora, which really the only way for a homeowner to get those out is to carve them out of the trunk if they're not too extensive.
Okay.
If they are too extensive, I would consider getting some new trees started over the next 2 or 3 years, and as your other ones decline, you can get the other ones into production. And so then going forward, you're going to paint those trunks so that they're white and do your best to maintain those trees. Spray every once a month for peach tree borer, and you can usually get 25 or 30 years out of a well-maintained peach tree.
Yeah, these trees are probably 25 years old.
Okay, so they're on the tail end of their life anyway. You're going to spend a lot more money trying to keep them going than you would just buying new trees. And so do what you can with them to maintain them for 3 or 4 years to get some other trees into production.
Okay.
All right, Joe. Hopefully that helps you out. Peach trees can be frustrating sometimes, Ton. I know that. I lost one last year, so hopefully you can save those. All right, we're going to jump out and take a break here. We're going to be back on the other side of the break. Take another call. Gloria's up next. We also have Jim and Caleb waiting on the line. This is the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
We are back on the KSL Greenhouse Show, and I promise to take more calls. That's what we're going to do right now. Gloria has been waiting on the line, calling in this morning from Magna. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning.
How can we help you out today?
We have about a 30-year-old Jonathan apple tree, and we notice where we've cut some of the, maybe a bigger limb off, it's got like white fuzz. But when we looked at that white fuzz, it's kind of wet, and underneath it has like little black spots. I don't know if that's a bug or some eggs or what. What would that be?
Well, if it's kind of black and waxy, fuzzy, you probably have woolly apple aphid.
Okay, so what do you do for that?
Well, it depends on how extensive. How many branches do you see it on or
limbs? I don't know, maybe 5 or 6.
And does it look like it's causing harm to the tree?
Not so far.
So what I would start with is just getting some water and dish detergent and getting a scrub brush, if you can reach it, and just scrubbing it off the tree.
Okay.
And if they come back and you start to see some populations, do it again. Okay. Now, what happens is these will migrate down and overwinter on the roots and then come back up, and you'll have populations in both places. And so if it looks like it's harming the tree, what I would do is get a systemic. You would actually want to put a systemic down about now, and you can find them labeled for apple trees, and you would pour that systemic from a 5-gallon bucket around the base of the tree, and over a number of weeks, the tree would absorb it and kill the woolly apple aphid. But that's usually like my plan B or plan C, and I like to see just a little soap and water will get rid of it.
Okay. Well, if you use a systemic, what kind would you use? What would you use?
Oh, there's several brands out there. Bayer, which is now just, I think, Power Force or Max Force, but it's the old Bayer brand. They make one that is registered for apples. And so when you went into your local garden center or farm store, you just need to tell them that you need a systemic registered for fruiting trees, fruiting apples.
Okay. Also, my husband says that the leaves are curling, kind of, and he thought maybe it was, oh, I forgot now. Anyway, was that anything to do with that?
Maybe. It could be. It could be wind if it's brand new growth. It could be residual herbicide damage if you put a lawn weed killer down within the last month. It could be lawn weed killer from the neighbors. Of those leaves that are curling a little bit, you'll want to check them and make sure they're not sticky. It's just to confirm you don't have another species of aphid on there.
Okay. All right.
All right. Good luck with that, Gloria. Talking about apples, Ton, real quick, where are we with the coddling moth and spraying with apples?
Well, around the 19th, anywhere from about the 17th to the 25th was the first spray date. And so if you missed it, get an apple tree spray on soon, whether it's organic or conventional. And then the next one will usually be in a few weeks. But the coddling moth are out, and the Wasatch Front has been warm enough the last 10 years or so that we've started to have a consistent third generation to where we used to not. And so if you use the USU Pest Lab updates that we keep mentioning, almost like we're an infomercial selling an MLM, except for this is good stuff, what I would say is that Marion will tell you exactly when you need to spray, and it'll give you maximum control for the least amount of effort and the least amount of spray.
Right. And we talked about getting on that email list earlier and how what a great service that is. And it is time for you to, especially on those fruit trees, cherries, it's going to be time to spray rather quickly. Looking at my cherries, I'm probably within a week or so of having to spray for those as well, right?
It is. So as soon as we start getting 90 degree weather, those cherries start to go pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So what you'll do is watch them. And when they go from green to straw yellow with just a blush of pink, that's when you spray.
Right. And because if you don't spray cherries, you are going to get worms.
Nice. It's I don't know if it'd be keto or maybe Atkins, but you get tons of added protein.
Yes. It's virtually impossible to get a good cherry without spraying around here.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the cherries will be fine. It's just you don't want to really look at the cherry too closely as you pop the seed out of your mouth. And so, but yeah, or make the neighbors a cherry pie that maybe you're not as thrilled with or something. So, but yeah, and you can use an organic spray. There's Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, or Fertilome has a couple of products. One of them is like a bagworm spray, and then they have a fruit tree spray with spinosad in it. But both Fertilome, and it might be Natural Guard now, Natural Guard and Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, both are organic and do a great job if you want to go that direction. My personal favorite, you have to order it off of Amazon anymore, but it's made by Ortho, and it's called Flower, Fruit, and Vegetable Spray.
Mm-hmm.
That one, you oftentimes get away with one spray, and it's reduced risk. So not quite organic, but reduced risk and a good spray.
Right. I mean, a lot of the sprays I've seen, and it depends on the spray you buy, of course, but you're spraying like every couple of weeks, especially for cherries. Sometimes.
Yeah, you are. And you will probably spray at least twice. If you're using Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, you may spray three times.
So you got to keep up. If you want those cherries, you got to keep up on that. And of course, the coddling moth, apparently we're already past time for the first spray. So if you've got apples, it's time to get that spray on as well. All right, we're going to jump out and take a break here. And when we come back on the other side of news, traffic, and weather, we're going to take more of your calls. We've got Roger, Jim, Caleb, Eric, and Leonard all on the line waiting to chat. We're heading into the final half hour of the Greenhouse Show for this Saturday. And we're going to jump out for that news, traffic, and weather now. And we'll be back with more on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.